tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I'm your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 30 years now with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we're talking with Matt Tugas, aka Matt the Cat Guy, in southeastern South Dakota. Matt is the president and founder of Sioux Empire TNR, as well as Sioux Empire Cats. He's also a trapper, transporter, foster, volunteer, and donor for the TNR group and rescue. His organization, Sioux Empire TNR Coalition, is a 501c3 nonprofit pushing for legalization of TNR in southeastern South Dakota, as well as a foster-based rescue that deals with the intake from the TNR operations. TNR is not currently accepted in Sioux Falls and is not legal by city ordinance yet, but Matt has facilitated a South Dakota state statute that hit the law books this month in July of 2024 that protects TNR statewide. Matt wasn't always a cat guy. In fact, he used to be very heavily involved with Dakota Dachshund Rescue as a board member and foster for wiener dogs. Regardless how many cats Matt has in his home, there will always be two wiener dogs in the group. So in 2016, while on a rock climbing trip, Matt and his wife, Amanda, were adopted by a kitten that appeared out of the woods. Being animal lovers, but not cat people, they brought it back to town to find it a good home. He's yet to leave the house. And I might see a picture of a kitty right behind you, right there. A Texie male named Carabiner, or Beans for short. Beans taught Matt and Amanda how much joy a cat can bring into one's life and so much more about the greatness of our feline friends. Fast forward to late 2017, when Matt responded to a Facebook post about a small orange kitten in need of help. Matt went and picked up an emaciated female ginger named Xena, warrior princess, and nursed her back to health. That experience started a fire inside him that is still burning 7+ years later. After that first official rescue, Matt started volunteering for local rescues, helping with cat care, before getting into fostering. Boy, this was a slippery slope that started helping 1 hour a week at a local Petco that now takes up more time than his full-time job. Since that day in 2017, Matt has been compelled to be doing everything in his power to improve feline welfare in southeast South Dakota. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
So we've heard in the bio here a bit of your story about how this burning passion for cats started within you. And you ended the story at around 2017, and we are now at 2024. So what has happened in the last 7 years that has continued to increase that passion for cats?
Like I said in my bio there, I started doing cat care at a local Petco. When you go to Petco, PetSmart, they have the cats for adoption there, right? So I started off just going in 1 hour a week and changing litter and taking care of kitties and helping with adoptions. And that kind of turned into fostering, which we've all been there. There's a few foster fails involved. And then I've always kept that spot at Petco, and they've always been some different rescues that have cycled through there. And I've always just stayed there. So up until I started the coalition, I considered myself more of a rescue support. I wasn't just with one rescue. I helped all of them. If they dealt with cats, I was helping them, typically through the Petco adoption centers, where I started. But then again, once you get into rescue and hear about it, it just grows. I think most cat rescuers would agree and understand that it starts with one, and you have five, and then you stop counting. But I understand this is a community kind of cats podcast, and I'll get to reason why we're talking about, or why I'm here then. But it grew into a situation where I felt that the bandwidth of what was needed for rescue in Sioux Falls was not being adequately served. There's three other different rescues here. We just have a massive cat problem. Just through helping other rescues and things like that, we ended up helping a gal TNR some cats that ended up with her getting cited by animal control. And basically, the animal control officer told us, if you don't like the law, it's the same. And so that's kind of what started this whole coalition. So I don't have a big history of trapping. I'm learning more and more all the time, but it's not like it's something I've been doing for a super long time. It's more long I came from the rescue. saw the need, and locally here we have a big need for TNR. So I took up the torch. And the thought was, is I didn't want to start another rescue that was going to fill up. The thought with TNR is reduction of numbers and spay and neuter, and that's a completely different mission for the most part. And we started, and we just created such a bandwidth of people calling us for stray kittens, stray cats. I'm sure anybody that works in rescue, you know, is like, once your name gets out there, kind of gets spread around quite a bit. So we were kind of a safe force, but turning into a rescue was actually just the next progression of things.
Yeah, I mean, that the exact same thing happened to the organization that I was involved with back in the 90s in Massachusetts. So they were founded in 1992, and everybody's house ended up filling up with foster kittens. And they were doing trap, neuter, return for these 300 cats on the waterfront, but they took 125 socialized cats and kittens off the waterfront that first year. And they didn't go to a shelter. They went to various people's houses. And there was one person's house that was like the primary house that ended up getting a bulk of those cats and kittens. And so that then they ended up moving into an adoption facility, a shelter. They rented a small space above a veterinarian. And then I got involved with the group a couple of years later. I answered the phone and I was doing the intakes. And people were calling from all over saying, can't you take them from me? Aren't you municipally funded? Isn't this your responsibility? Don't you have to help them? And then also they would say, well, I need what you have in this town, in my town. So can you put this here? And I said, I can't do another adoption center in your town. That's just, it's not solving the situation,
no.
Which is, it all revolves around access to spay neuter. And we did create these mass style clinics that were free for spay neuter for feral cats once a month in the region. That was something I could do. I could create that, but I wasn't creating a whole nother adoption center because that was adoption is incredibly expensive. And it sounds like you're in that challenging point right now in South Dakota where you've just got the critical mass of these calls coming in and you need to be able to triage out in some spay neuter alternatives.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. It ties our hands in a lot of ways, especially when we don't have favorable ordinance. I think on a state level, South Dakota's fine with TNR. We've got some local hurdles to jump yet, but with the local Humane Society in our corner, we should be able to get it done. But yeah, no, there needs to be other options because you just... It's not sustainable to do it that way.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you a question. So you said you haven't done a lot of TNR, but you have used this word recently, pivoted. You've pivoted a bit to focus some of your time, energy, and resources in advocating for trap, neuter, return.
Mm-hmm.
In South Dakota, are there many groups that do trap, neuter, return? And what is the spay neuter capacity for trap neuter return, or are there significant obstacles there?
Yeah, the biggest obstacle is there's no such thing as a low cost spay neuter clinic in South Dakota. We don't have those here. That's not an option. So I live in Sioux Falls, it's the southeast corner. We're mainly agricultural here in South Dakota, a little bit more spread out. Our community cats kind of branch like the southeast corner of the state versus a concentrated metro area would or an urban area would. But to get veterinary care that's affordable, especially for people, say it's not uncommon to buy a property here, a few acres, and it's going to come with 15, 20 cats. And if you're the responsible person, you got to go out and you got to spay and neuter those cats. And
right.
The average spay right now is between $200 and $300.
Yep.
And you can't expect people to be doing that. And that's a big part of what we've done while we've been waiting for the TNR, because we're still small town South Dakota, and I'm friends with some city administrators. I'm friends with the chief of police. I'm friends with the director of animal control. And since this has become such a forefront deal about TNR everything, I gave them our words that we won't do any TNR operations inside city limits until we get a favorable ordinance. It doesn't mean we're not going to do it outside city limits, but it's tough because we have it's an agricultural kind of mindset around here. So a lot of times it's just their barn cats, take them out and shoot them, pick stuff. And I think we're overcoming some of that, you know, with some education and some outreach, but there's a lot of things just stacked against the distance to for satellite communities to bring in multiple cats to get spay and neutered at a clinic that I'm going to pay $300 a cat for. It's just not happening.
And also in the communities that I've been involved with that have restrictive ordinances with regards to trap, neuter, return. It's not restricting you or creating some sort of spay, neuter capacity for owned cats.
Exactly.
So if there is an ability there to get some resources in the owned cat community and get there, you will see a reduction of intakes into the local area by about 30%. Even if you just do only an owned cat spay, neuter initiative, you do owned cat and TNR together in the first year, you'll see a reduction of intakes between 50 and 60% if in a targeted region. But the do nothing option is still not the best option. You can still provide resources into the community that can't afford access to those $200 and $300 spay neuter surgeries for sure.
And that's part of what we've been doing in the meantime here is we do have an alter assist program. A lot of times if they can qualify with us, we will offer that low cost spay and neuter through our rescue. So a lot of times with people that end up taking in animals, a lot of people have bigger hearts than they do wallets, right? And as rescuers, we end up in a lot of homes where you're in there where there's 4, 5, 6, 7 cats that aren't fixed, they're not vaccinated. We got to take care of that.
Right.
We have a big chunk of our resources that we're using for that. So even without the TNR, I think we're year to year over last year, we're fairly new. We're over at over 275 cats that we fixed in the last year. And I think for our first year, it's not bad without having the ability to go out. Because I think once we get ordinance here, there's a kind of a waiting list of people that want us to come out. They've got neighborhood cats that need to be dealt with. So we look forward to that.
Right. You're sort of holding your breath because you're understanding that there's opportunities out there that you're just not feeling like you're able to go out there and prevent the births of those kittens and that kind of stuff. So it really is, it's a challenge, but it sounds like you've got all the right parts moving in the correct direction within the community there. And having 275 owned cats fixed is really, really great. It's wonderful. And for folks that are out there and they're curious to understand how many cats that they need in their community need to get them spayed and neutered in order to be effective to reduce cat overpopulation, they can always reference our community cat calculator, and you can just put in your zip code and it'll help determine the number of cats the community really needs at the TNR level, as well as the owned cat spay neuter level will be effective. And it's not micromanaged. It's not down to the micro number. It's a guess, but it's a range, but at least it's a starting point to help. Cause you know, you're like, I don't know how many cats we've got out there. At least it gives you sort of a guidepost to work on an annual basis, and it helps you.
Yep.
You're talking about money and budgets and all that kind of stuff. Are you the president of the board of directors for your group?
Yep, I am the president of the board of directors, yes. And you are, you're right. I mean, we've been working with Best Friends out of Utah, and they did help work those numbers with us. And our magic number in a year is called 550. That's where we need to be with fixing cats. So not too far off of where I'm at now, as long as I can get some ordinances.
Mark your calendar. It's happening this Saturday. Join us this Saturday to learn the art of trap, neuter, return, a powerful way to transform the lives of community cats. Brought to you by Community Cats Podcast and Neighborhood Cats. This session is for anyone who wants to turn their passion for cats into action. Whether you're a seasoned caretaker or just starting out, there's something for everyone to learn. Don't wait. Reserve your spot now at communitycatspodcast.com/get TNR certified. Tomahawk Live Trap exceeds customers' expectations by providing them with the highest quality humane animal control products available. Check out their new Pro Series Gravity Door Trap. They feature a door that sets automatically when you open it. No hook or plate setting needed. Use discount code KEEPITHUMANE for 10% off your order at livetrap.com. In a recent study, 97% of respondents said that pets are family. Communities can play a vital role in helping to keep families together. Whether it's reuniting lost pets with their owners, donating pet supplies or funds for pet owners in need, or offering short or long-term fostering, people can help keep pets and their people together. We just have to show them how. Did you know there are resources you can use to help bring attention to the programs you offer to help them do just that? From public service announcements, short videos, printable posters, online and social graphics, and much more. Find your resources at www.petsandpeopletogether.org/campaign-resources. #BeAHelper. If you want to catalog all your cat sightings to manage your colonies easier, then Whisker Tracker is from you.
It's a free mobile app that lets you create cat profiles, see your cats on a map, and track the health and status of all your cats. Download the Whisker Tracker mobile app today.
That's great to know, because I think that a lot of our younger groups and the newer groups, it's really important to think strategically early on rather than being reactive and going, oh my gosh, I've got this over here. Now, oh my gosh, I've got this over there. It's trying to think, what's our target area? What's our strategy? What's our objective? And then once you've got one target area under control, you can move to another target area. We used to call it service area at the organization that I was with, Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. We had our service area. So when we first started out, our service area was one town. Then we expanded to three towns. And then by the time I had left the day-to-day management of the organization, we were up to 12 towns covering a population of like 125,000 people. And so it was like each year we just added another town, but it was like we had the central core that we fed off of. We maintained it. I mean, if new pockets opened up, we were back in there trapping, but we really had a critical mass taking care of that community. And then we built out from there. We started out with 300 cats, 14 feeding stations. By 2008 in that town, there were no feeding stations and no more cats. Once you feel like you've gotten to a certain area, then you just take a step out. And I mean, our ultimate goals with every colony is to get to 100% sterilization. I know some people say, oh, you can get away with just spaying and neutering 70% of the cats or whatever. But my perspective is always trying to make sure that the organization has resources and monitoring resources for those locations in case any newcomers do show up, and then you're able to respond quickly and react quickly and not go back there with 15 cats. You're just there with one or two cats.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, get them before the kittens show up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we see a lot of that. And that's a little bit of a part of our approach, being is that we're the smaller town situation. You know, we have a lot of smaller satellite communities that we go in and, well, that's the plan as we move forward with this. It's just community by community to try and sterilize as best we can. And we have people and contacts in each individual town that kind of help that too. And we're still very preliminary in a lot of this. Some of the smaller towns were okay with us TNRing. Some of them didn't. It wasn't legal, so they weren't too sure of it. But at least now with the state statute, really anywhere outside of the main area where we're at, it's not really a big issue. There was TNR operations going on West River. In fact, there's a West River Coalition TNR in South Dakota here. There's a gal in Winter she's about mid-state. She's doing some TNR work down there. And then there's us on the east side of the state. So yeah, but us being on the east side of the state and being in the bigger city, kind of being a little bit more spotlighted. The other two had been actually operating for some time. It wasn't until we had a person get in trouble with a citation for TNRing a cat, then we started to bring it to the forefront. So then around here, obviously, it was under the microscope. So it forced the microscope out everywhere else too. At one point, there was a risk of TNR being illegal statewide, but we figured that out ahead of time.
Wow, that's impressive. And I'm glad that you are connected enough to know that there are other organizations and individuals helping across the state. Because I don't think of South Dakota as a state that's got mega cities out there. And so it would be easy for people to operate in their own little silos, right? But maybe people do that in the cities too. So it's good that you're able to connect. I'm curious, Matt, from your perspective, either looking backwards or looking forwards, I understand we have this legislative issue. What other barriers and obstacles are out there? And if you had the magic wand, what would you do to help resolve those issues?
I think our biggest barrier is currently happening, and I think even once we get our ordinance, we're going to run into it, is just the education of the general public. The people that just, you know, because I still get, the people are still commenting, wasn't it just cheaper to euthanize? Why would trap and kill or just trap them and get out of there? Why wouldn't that work? You know, so I guess if I had a magic wand or my way, I would make everybody sit and watch the 3-minute YouTube video on how the vacuum effect works. A lot of the arguments or opposition I get, it's not educated. It's not factual data. It's like you heard something and then you derive your own opinion from something you heard. And now that's what you have against TNR. No, that's not how this works. So when we did our House representative hearings, I had a couple of legislators there. Have you done studies on the cost between TNR and euthanasia and everything? And I just had to politely ask, like, you clearly are not paying attention to what I'm saying here, are you? But But that, I think there's always going to be that. So, but yeah, that's the biggest challenge we're going to have too, is because we're a growing area. Sioux Falls is one of the fastest growing communities around. And when I go talk to the city council, I let them know that as we grow, so does our cat population, and our animal control policy needs to progress a little bit more than what it is currently. And I think we're probably, I would hope by the time this podcast hits the air, we are TNRing legally in Sioux Falls. Like I said, it hit state books July 1st, 2024. Today was the second week in July now. Yeah, give me another 5 or 6 city council meetings, and hopefully that'll get it done, that translates to about 3 months. But municipal governments or municipalities, it's an interesting game. I've had a few people tell me that I should go into politics after this, and I have no interest in that at all. I'll stick with the cats.
Yeah. Well, in a way, you have to be a bit of a politician, negotiating with caretakers and neighbors and all of that stuff. There's some challenging conversations you have to have out in the field, and certainly on the phone calls that come in, especially if you're at capacity and you have to think creatively, how can I help this person? Or tell them gently, no, I can't, but have them feel like they got some assistance too. It's a big challenge that we do when we manage these outreach. Well, in old days, it was all the phone. Now it's email and other ways, but lots of challenges there.
No, it's funny. Yeah, we got torched this weekend by somebody that we're fairly new. And especially when it comes to bottle babies and stuff like that, we have very small capacity. So I told somebody that we just didn't have the capacity. And of course, you know how people can get. Somewhere to have haters, you're doing something right.
That's a good perspective. It's a very good perspective. And so many of those phone calls and many people who got involved with our organization were people that we had very strong board members who actually never adopted from us, but they had colonies in their backyard, and that we had helped them get the cats TNR'd. And they joined our board of directors because we were the only folks that offered an alternative other than trap and euthanize. One person is a great lawyer, and he was on our zoning board. So politically, he was connected with the city.
That helps a lot, yeah.
And it helps a lot. And he was a lawyer. He was on our board for years. And I used to call him the voice of reason, because we would have these heated arguments at the board level back in the 90s when we were dealing with hoarding situations left and right, and we were over capacity and stuff. And then you'd have a pause in the room and he would come out with something that would just calm us all down. So you meet some incredible people when you're out in the field, but you do have challenging conversations. I have people that hated me in the beginning and loved me at the end. You do go through a conversion process also.
Definitely.
So hopefully it doesn't happen with everybody, but people should be forgiving as to the best of their capabilities. Again, there are some cases where we just have to walk away and we're going, I got to think about my safety first and walk away. But sometimes it's what is it? You make lemonade out of those lemons in the conversations. But it sounds like you're very much, on the front lines, on the political front lines, as well as the caretaking, the adopting front lines.
Yep.
And all of that kind of stuff. If there are folks that are interested in finding out more about your organization and the coalition, how would they do that?
Our biggest resource is our website, SiouxEmpireTNR.org. SiouxEmpireTNR.org. I'm board member Michelle is a web designer. And so everything you need to know about us is out there, everything from a volunteer application to a donation. We have resources for what happens if we find a pregnant cat? What do I do? You know what I mean? We have everything. So anything you need to know about us, we'll definitely be there. We do a lot of work through Facebook too. I like to use Facebook's power for good. So you can certainly find us on the social media.
Excellent. Excellent. Matt, I truly do appreciate you joining us. And I want to wish you great luck with your work up ahead for the rest of 2024. As well as 2025. I have a last question. I'm going to slip it right in here.
No, that's go for it.
So you are in wintertime.
Correct.
You are in a cold climate, right? In the wintertime?
Yes.
So do you trap year round or do you pause in the heart of the winter?
It depends upon how cold. We trap year round, but obviously if it's, because we'll get 20 below snap, obviously we don't trap then. We never leave traps unattended. So if you set a trap in the wintertime, you're there with it. Part of the plan then is we need a warm spot for especially the females to recoup for that at least 24 hours. So few more moving parts in the wintertime, but luckily we've got some big-hearted people with heated garages to help us out with stuff like that. Yeah, in general, it slows things down. I mean, just like everything else, the cold and snow slows things down.
Right, right. Well, but the cats aren't pregnant, and so it makes the surgeries a lot easier.
True. Yeah, they're not pregnant as often. I can't remember what it was like to trap a non-pregnant female. It's been a while.
Uh-oh. So shows they have plenty of food available for them. That's for sure.
It's a culture shift around here, too.
Yeah.
With the whole thing about you feed them, you got to fix it.
Matt, I want to thank you again for agreeing to be a guest on the show, and I hope we'll have you on again in the future.
Yeah, let me know. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.